On this episode of the Fieldhouse Files, Tyrese Haliburton is getting through a slump. Ben Matherin has surgery and is out for the year. The Pacers are back from a road trip out west, and there's just 8 games left. And then I'm joined by Hall of Famer Ben Wallace to discuss his Chosen One mini-documentary debuted in Indy during All-Star Weekend.
I know that Fieldhouse Files has a prolific following. You know, I just want to be careful about sharing too much with the world.
And welcome into the Fieldhouse Files, the podcast where I take you behind the scenes with the Pacers, talk to individuals on and around the team, and tell you what you need to know. Hello again, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Fieldhouse Files podcast as we're winding down on the regular season. Just over 2 weeks remain, and so we're beginning to enter standings watch, right? As the Pacers are trying to make it back to the postseason for the first time since the pandemic and try to have some home games for the first time since 2019. That was several coaches ago. This is Rick Carlisle in his third season and after a couple of years of rebuilding. And this one included, I think, in that the next step in the progression is reaching the playoffs, especially with a young team, especially with an inexperienced group, a motivated group that needs to experience so many things for the first time. That's something that Tyrese Haliburton has emphasized for the last couple of years as he's going through many of the things that make you an NBA player for the first time, experiencing the business of basketball in being traded to Indy, experiencing being an all-star, a two-time all-star, possibly all-NBA, having to be considered for the all-NBA voting, and then how his contract is directly impacted by that, being the face of a team and what demands and what is required of that, and the conversations you have both in propping your team up and the hard conversations I think that are required and recruitment of players. And I think the latest and the biggest thing, which is where I'll start this podcast, is Tyrese and the demands of him on the court, right? And being the face of the team and opponents adapting to him and knowing if they eliminate him, they minimize what the Pacers are able to do out on the court. We really first saw that last season with a couple of teams. I immediately think of Jaden McDaniels with the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's always interesting to see him against his former team in the Sacramento Kings. And then this season, it really became relevant and noteworthy when they faced the LA Lakers in the in-season tournament. And coming up on Friday, for the second time in this week and for the third time this season, which is obviously a rarity, never happens against a Western Conference team during the regular season. Well, except for this season because of the day of the debut of the in-season tournament, is those two teams will face off for a third time, just like they've played the Bucks 5 times already. And then they also face the Brooklyn Nets several times, a team they didn't face for 90% of the season, and now they play him like 3 times over the final couple of weeks. But Tyrese Haliburton is having to go through a lot of things that are new for him, and part of that has been a mini slump that he's been on, and it's really extended, I would say, since he returned from injury, but it's intensified, I would say, coming out of All-Star break, as it's something that he's experiencing and trying to learn through and grow through. It's as much physical as I think it is mental as well. So much of it starts, and the origin of all this is that, January 8th injury against the Boston Celtics. It kept him out for a couple of weeks. Well, not quite a couple of weeks. I think he returned after about 11 days, which much surprise to everyone. Played in Pascal Siakam's debut game with the Pacers in Portland. Didn't feel great, and then sat out once again. But there's a lot of urgency, I think, he felt to get back and to be there as well with Pascal as he made his debut. And just over the last couple of months, Tyrese has not looked the same. He has not looked as confident. He has not looked as sharp. He's not looked as explosive and confident in his moves out there. That sidestep back three hasn't been there as often. I don't think he's looking for that as often. I think you see him either not exploding off that left leg. Remember, it's a left hamstring injury. You don't see that as much, or he's just not attacking quite as much. And when he does, he's so off balance that I don't think officials are wanting to reward him with the foul calls. They see him kind of off balance and falling, and so they say, hey, maybe that wasn't a foul as much. At least that's how I see it, that if he went straight up, used 2 feet, maybe he'd get that call more often. But over this road trip, Tyrese shot 43% from range. Notable because before the trip, he had been shooting 17% from distance this month. And this is a guy that is absolutely a 40% three-point shooter, a threat, a guy that can really shoot it from outside. And among the other things, factors playing into all this is just the landscape of this Pacers team and how much they have changed. And it starts with personnel, right? And Buddy Hield being traded from the team. And again, that's as much physical of him being out there, being a threat, doing those ghost screens like Tyrese talked about in a press conference earlier this month. Buddy being a threat out there opens things up for him and for everybody else. And beyond that, he hadn't played an NBA game in his four seasons without Buddy Hield being next to him on the bench or on the court. So that's a mental transition that he has to and is having to overcome. They are very close, and think in the last year, he's, you know, O'Shea Brissett wasn't brought back. That's one of his best friends, a guy that he's talked through throughout this slump and almost every day anyway, because that's how close they are. Same is true for Buddy Hield, and I'm sure Buddy's just saying, hey, man, if you're not making your first eight, that means you're going to make your ninth. The percentages say so. Keep shooting. You have to have that shooter's mentality. I'm guessing that's what Buddy has been stressing to him during their conversations. But Tyrese has improved and looking more sure of himself and more like himself, but not quite back completely. And I'm now at the point, two plus months, since that injury, that maybe we're not going to see that guy until next season after he has a full off season, is able to get really that month off of quiet time that he needs and downtime off the leg and able to rehab that. And just the intensity of his year. I wrote about this on fieldhousefiles.com, both documenting all the different factors that are in play for him right now in one article, and then in a second saying basically, hey, he needs to hit the reset button. He needs a reset. Maybe that's go away for a couple days, not touch a basketball. And I wonder how much has that played into it, right? They traveled out west, long plane rides, you're alone in your bed in your hotel, and you know, all you can focus on is that, and you're watching March Madness, and that's always a little bit inspirational as he's watching all these great young players come into the league, and you remember the fun in basketball, that it's not just business, although that's a big part, that it's not just hitting shots, it's not just leading a team, but there's so many other elements, so many more fun elements that go into that, and he's watching his Iowa State team progress throughout the tournament. That's got to be helpful for him, at least I think so, as well. But I don't think he's back completely, but we have seen some positivity from him, both in his production and from just the attitude, I think, because you can see if he's unhappy, he's complaining more to officials, he's taking it out on others, his face is in his hands, rather than skipping down the court and having fun and slapping hands with James Johnson, those different things. Those are the signs of he's back that I'm looking for in large part. Now, another point guard is TJ McConnell on this roster, and what a year that he has had. He's coming off a career season that he had last year, obviously, and that's why it was a little bit bizarre when Rick Carlisle announced at the first game, hey, we've told him to be ready, but he's out of the rotation. Well, he's too good to be out of the rotation. I think the body of work of TJ McConnell has shown that this year, that he's been their most consistent player throughout the year. And what's key for him is his role. He repeats it time and time again, and he'll even repeat that he's just repeating what he says, which is hilarious to me. He's accepted his role, he's embraced his role, and now he's starring in his role. And the thing that TJ is repeating is, hey, I'm just out there, I'm doing my job, I know what the team asked of me, I'm the energy guy. His short mid-range shot has been remarkable, how he has mastered that. He's not master of the mid-range like a Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, maybe Malcolm Brogdon. He's the master of the short range, that 4 to 8 foot shot, especially fading away. I think he does that. He creates the distance, creates separation from the defender, and opponents take him lightly. They still do. I don't get it. And just like they don't expect that steal, the inbounds pass, yet he still gets one of those almost every single game. TJ McConnell's been this team's most consistent player since the All-Star break, and I don't think there's any question about that, considering what he demands of him, the way in which he's produced, how he's helped others, how he's helped lift this team when other players are not playing so well. Well, TJ's reached double figures in 8 straight games and in 11 of 14 games this month. He's just been really, really good and has shown that he is one of the best reserve point guards in the league. No question about that. And you can see why someone like Rick Carlisle wants to keep him on roster and doesn't even want to trade him. There were several teams interested in acquiring him both the offseason and the midseason by the trade deadline. But if you're a team, you got to hesitate doing that just because of what we've seen him do, the way in which he produces, the way in which he's that energizer off the bench, and how he plays his role. It's a role that any team really needs to value. Now, coming up on Friday, it'll be fun with the Lakers in town for their only visit of the year. It's one of the most in-demand tickets each year, especially now with LeBron on this team for the last half dozen years. LeBron and Anthony Davis both questionable in Friday's game, but like the Pacers, right now you're wondering about the play-in game. And so those two, I got to believe, will be out there if they can. AD didn't play in the last game. LeBron did, but by AD sitting out in Memphis, a game against a Memphis team that's not good, that has all kinds of injuries. Now they're coming to Indianapolis, and they're going to be hungry for a win right here. So that will be a fun game coming up Friday night. 8 games left, 5 at home for the next 5 at Gainbridge Fieldhouse for this Pacers team. Right now they're 41-33, just hanging on to the 6th seed in the Eastern Conference. But there is a huge cluster of teams, really from spots 4 through 8. I'm talking Cleveland, Orlando, Indiana, Miami, Philadelphia. And a big missed opportunity on Wednesday with the Pacers going into Chicago and not just losing, but laying an egg. It was a dud of a game. They trailed at the end of each quarter. And not only was the loss concerning and annoying and frustrating for the team because they had a chance to gain ground. Orlando's lost 2 in a row. They lost that night. So did Miami. So did Philadelphia. It was a chance to gain ground. Right now, they're currently 2 games back from the 5th seed in Orlando. But it seems clear that they will be in the play-in game at minimum. But that's not why this team is playing games. No, they're playing for the playoffs. And you go and get a guy like Pascal Siakam to ensure that you are in the top 6 and to maybe get you into the top 4. Now, for some of the elements I've talked about before, the slump, playing all these games, change in lineups, probably having some remorse in trading Buddy Hield. As well, this team has had a troubling March, just kind of barely hanging above 500 this month as we enter the final couple of weeks of the season here. But now's about the time where I really start having standings watch. But it's also about that time when you seriously consider what I call missed opportunities, losses to teams they had no business losing to. I'm not talking about even the games like Chicago the other night. Chicago's a winning team. They're a potential play-in team. No, I'm talking about the god-awful teams, the teams that have won 12 games, 14 games, that are more or less tanking or just not frankly good enough. I'm talking about the 2 losses in 2 games to the Portland Trailblazers this year. I'm talking about 2 losses to the Charlotte Hornets, or 1 loss to the Wizards or the Spurs. None of those teams are any good. All of those teams are headed for the lottery. That's 4 losses. No, sorry. That's 6 losses right there that are troubling. If not, you have 47 wins, and you would be in 2nd above the Milwaukee Bucks, for example. Think about that. I'm not saying take on extra wins to, you know, the Cavaliers or to the Magic in a tough loss that they had, or splitting games with the 76ers, maybe if you win. No, I'm talking about if you handle your business about the worst teams in the league, you would be 2nd right now in the Eastern Conference. Now, the other fair argument is there's a couple games maybe they shouldn't have won, right? Maybe it was a game against Boston in the in-season tournament, or after that in the semifinals against Milwaukee in the in-season tournament, or later on when they split with Boston, split with Milwaukee. Maybe that helps make up for it, and certainly does. But man, especially the 2 to Portland, 2 to the Hornets, who always give them fits, those sting And those are the ones you really think back at there later in the season. Coming off a loss, the Pacers are Wednesday night in Chicago. And the word that Rick Carlisle used, and it's really been a theme for this season, is inconsistencies. There's been the highs, there's been the lows. There's really not much in between, right? The losses are big, and the wins feel bigger when you consider the totality of this season. And I'm just stunned at that performance on Wednesday. I know it was game five of a road trip. They're making their way home. They're probably eager to get home. You could see that fatigue was a factor, but also revenge had to be a factor. They had to remember just 2 weeks ago what the Chicago Bulls team did to the Pacers when they came into Indianapolis. DeMar DeRozan went for a season-high 46 points, how he hit a buzzer beater, and that was only to force overtime. And then they won in overtime in Indy on your home court, a Central Division foe, a team that's without two starters in LaMelo Ball and Zach LaVine for most of the season. That has to drive you nuts. And so for them to have the performance that they did Wednesday night in Chicago was utterly frustrating. I see that in the comments on my stories from fans of how that was unacceptable, how some saying even I took it lighter on them than maybe I should have been, as that was a troubling loss and one that really that was not a fun watch at all if you were able to watch that game Wednesday night. It was 20-plus point blowout. They did get it within seven in the second half, but not for very long. And then we saw the Bulls crank it up in the fourth quarter back to double digits where it remained. And we saw Carlisle wave the white flag with about 5 minutes left, totally emptying his bench and bringing in reserves there. It was their third game in 4 days. Again, I feel like I'm just repeating excuses here. You go into Chicago, that's a game where you got to at least match the intensity of the Bulls and bring it. And there's no reason you should not have come out at least with a better performance, and certainly maybe a win, but definitely a better performance, one that you could feel positive about moving forward. I heard Tyrese after the game saying, hey, shots didn't go in. Shots just didn't go in. Yeah, maybe that was some of it, but you also gave up a lot of points. The Chicago Bulls scored 125 points. That's unacceptable. They shot 50% from the field, and you only forced 8 turnovers. You can do better than that. It was one of their worst shooting nights of the season. Season low 40%, season low point total. But it was a lot more than just missing shots. It was the effort plays. It was the rebounding. The Pacers are number one in points in the paint. The Bulls are number one in defense in points in the paint. And the defense won out. It's another reason why defense is so important and cannot be overlooked. And it was also strange for me to see. It's funny to see the progressions of the season, right? The first couple of months, the Pacers are that hot, young, sexy new team, right? They're setting records for their historic offense. Now, against the Bulls, they failed to reach 100 points for the first time this season. In 18 games this season, they failed to score 110 points. And when they do that, they have lost all 18 games. So they have to have a much better offense. They have to have much more production, because if it's 110 points or less, that's been an automatic loss for the Pacers this season. So another loss on Wednesday. Instead of having a 4-1 road trip, which is remarkable, considering you go out west after, it was kind of a weird trip, right? You start in Detroit, then you go out west, Golden State, LA, then you come home kind of to Chicago before coming home. And a 4-1 would have been phenomenal. Instead, 3-2, good. Certainly positive. Able to get a win over an LA Clippers. And then followed by that, or before that actually, with Golden State. But still, to not get one against the Lakers, and even worse, to allow 150 points, the most they had allowed since mid-December to the Clippers, when they scored, I think, 151, and that was kind of the theme for, or the endpoint to one iteration of the Pacers and a starting point for them locking down and playing defense again. That marked the new start there. Now, on the road trip, one player I want to highlight is Miles Turner. He's been really good this month. Really good season once again. I think it's been undervalued, underappreciated, perhaps, what he's been able to do. This month alone, he's second in scoring behind Pascal Siakam, but above Tyrese Haliburton. But during that win at Golden State, Miles not only had a good game, a 5-block game, but he also had a historic one for himself and a record-setting one because he needed several blocks, three blocks going in to set the franchise record, and he did that and then some. Now has more than 1,246 blocks. That was the record-breaking one. 1,245 was the record owned by Jermaine O'Neal. And after breaking that record, Miles said this in the locker room to reporters. "It's definitely an emotional feeling just being here as long as I have and just going through everything I've been through. I think it's amazing I can leave with something no matter what happens in the future. I can tell my kids about this moment, my grandkids, and hopefully this record is here to stay for a long time." Miles Turner's been a Pacer since 2015. He was their first-round pick. He signed two contract extensions. He's played for four different head coaches, Vogel, McMillan, Bjorkgren, and Carlisle. He's been through so many different iterations. He's sacrificed, whether it's the double bigs, and seen, you know, he's played with Paul George. He's played with Tyrese Halliburton, Victor Oladipo. He's got an interesting book whenever he wants to write it. I also thought it was interesting how much he's thought about, clearly, kind of kids, grandkids, all that, considering he's not even married just yet. And that shows me kind of where his head's at and how mature he is and what is his focus or what might be his focus here coming up. But a special night for Miles and his family, certainly there with that passing of the baton a little bit with that new record. And I wrote about that night on Fieldhouse Files. What I chose to do is go back to kind of his first 2 days as a Pacer in 2015 after he was the 11th overall pick. And I remember how so much of that conversation was about his gait, meaning his running style, how he gets up and down the floor, how quick he is. And some teams were considering, like, do we hold that against them? And I remember his agent, Andy Miller, commissioning a study at the time to prove, hey, it's nothing of concern. And it really hasn't been. He's had some fluke injuries, stress reaction, big toe injury, all that. But he's remained relatively healthy the last couple of years. That's been great to see. He's pushed aside those trade rumors that he dealt with almost inevitably every single year in the middle of his the middle part of his career, you know, seasons 4 through 8, essentially, not this year. And then maturity has been a really big theme for him over the last several years, for sure. So congrats to Miles. Also on the road trip, was really good to see Doug McDermott back from injury. He had missed 10 games. Really, his time with the Pacers stopped before it really got going. Just a couple games in, caused him to miss almost a month. He returned on the road trip after that calf strain and knocked down a couple of shots. Only saw limited action, seen about 13 minutes per game. I'd like to see more from him. Like to see more from the Pacers and their guards, a position that was one of their most stacked lineups, almost too many guys, certainly too many guys at the beginning of the season. Now it's too few and needing more contributions there because Bruce Brown traded, Buddy Hield traded, Benedict Mathurin out for the season. And so you need a guy like Doug McDermott stepping up. We've seen McConnell. Nemhard's being played more as an off-ball guard and more so as a defensive stopper rather than what he expected to be used at the beginning of the season, which is why in the summer he was really training to have the ball in his hand more. He was training to be the backup point guard, but instead he's been off the ball really since the trade, since Buddy's not in the starting lineup and all that. And then the most recent thing, something I haven't touched on, is Benedict Mathurin, a huge loss for him and the Pacers, missing the final couple months of the season after suffering a shoulder injury that required surgery. After having it looked at by a couple of doctors, it was decided that he had a torn labrum in his right shoulder. And here a couple weeks ago, was out in Los Angeles, had surgery by a doctor for the stars. That's Dr. Neil Eletrage. Start of the doctors, guys like Kobe, Aaron Rodgers, his Achilles this past season. Pascal Siakam had a similar procedure as Mathurin several years ago by Dr. Eletrage. And so, one, you know you're getting a great doctor, Mathurin is. But two, he's been away from the team. He hadn't been able to contribute. And these are huge minutes that he could be playing. Part of the reason you do make the Buddy Hield trade is it opens up more minutes for Mathurin. We've seen a lot more minutes for Ben Shepherd. Jairus Walker has been utilized much more in the last month or so as well. But it was cool to see Mathurin reunited with his teammates in Los Angeles this week at the team hotel That had to lift his spirits a little bit. And for the team as well, to see their second-year guard, he was in a sling in his right arm, but he's out for the season. The team believes he'll be ready to go by training camp next fall. I think this will directly impact if he's able to be ready, and I don't think he will be, with Canada for the Olympics in Paris this summer, something Ben and Andrew Nimhard are both hoping to do. I think this kind of knocks that out for Ben Mathurin, but we'll see how that shoulder heals here coming up. A couple other notes I want to get to before my conversation with Ben Wallace, who was in town like many other stars in the NBA during All-Star Weekend last month. First of all, the NBA shutting down the G League Ignite team after this season. Not exactly surprised by that. It's something that Commissioner Adam Silver hinted at during his kind of State of the League address in Indy at All-Star Weekend, saying, you know, it hadn't really worked out like we thought. So many different factors have gone into that, but mostly it's kind of just been the NIL and how that has all worked out. NIL, the collectives, group collectives, has kind of been invented to help pay players. The transfer portal, all that's ongoing right now, has been huge. And one team here locally that's taken advantage of all that of G League Ignite shutting down is Indiana. As I'm recording this on Thursday, they picked up like a top 10 recruit in 6'7" wing Bryson Tucker, who was committed to play in G League Ignite. Well, now he's committed to Mike Woodson at Indiana, I'm sure. He's helping to make up some money, certainly, that he was promised with G League Ignite. That's part of it. That goes into the NIL and collective, certainly. And so this Ignite team was no good this year. I think they were like 2-18 last time I looked. It was no longer competitive. The guys were not getting the exposure. I'm not sure the development was there as much as they hoped. I'd compliment the league. I thought it was a great idea at the time about 4 years ago. Trouble is, it was during the pandemic. It was 2020. And then all of this new stuff was creative that no one necessarily saw coming. And so you take your losses, you accept it, and you move on. And the worst thing would be to just continue to be disappointed by it. And so this is the last year for the G League Ignite. Pacers Sports and Entertainment quietly renewed its sponsorship partnership with Salesforce. That's notable because for the Indiana Fever, that means Salesforce will remain on their jerseys where it's been as a sponsor on their jerseys since 2019. And it remains the Salesforce practice court at Gainbridge Fieldhouse, home for the Indiana Fever, which, by the way, big week for ticket sales for both the Pacers and the Fever. They held two Select Your Seat events at the Fieldhouse this week while the Pacers were away, and I'm sure Fever tickets are going crazy right now. Double, triple in price, and expecting them to, for example, the last many years they've had kind of the north end zone, north baseline end zone, kind of a fan area, blow-ups, face painting. Yeah, they're getting rid of all that. Let's put in some seats because there's a lot more demand for tickets this upcoming season because of Caitlin Clark, Aaliyah Boston, but especially Caitlin. And by the way, those two are two of 14 players named to USA Basketball's training camp roster, which will be held in two weekends in Cleveland, coincidentally and appropriately, during the women's Final Four. That'd be a lot of fun if both Boston and Clark make the Olympic team this summer. Well, this past week, I wrote about Gordon Hayward, his career caught up with him, and discussed his situation, how he's been in the league 14 years, how so much of his career is intertwined with Paul George, the Pacers pick, and how Gordon told me that he was told by the Pacers that if he was still available at 10, they would have selected Gordon. And both players talked about why it's better to go away and not play for your hometown team when you're first entering the league. Couple more things. As I wrote at Fieldhouse Files, Westfield senior guard Trey Buchanan, that's the oldest son of Pacers general manager Chad Buchanan, he recently committed to play at the University of Iowa for Fran McCaffrey as a preferred walk-on. He's really added a lot of bulk, a lot of weight. He's a kind of a pass-first guard, smart IQ, looks to get teammates involved, good leader out on the floor. Went and saw him play this season. I'm writing about that as well. But he's really morphed from being just a pure shooter into an all-around player that maybe he won't get a ton of minutes. But he wants to coach. He wants to remain in basketball. And so not only will he be a walk-on at University of Iowa, but he'll be right there in the Big Ten and be every day around basketball and in on the scouts and all those different things that can help him progress in his career, because he wants to stay in basketball once his career of playing days are over. And then shout out to Michael Grady. Big week for him, making his first nationally televised NBA broadcast. Now, you obviously know him from former PA announcer for the Pacers, former MC, host of the Grady and Big Show previously, worked at Channel 6, had three jobs at one time here in Indianapolis before leaving about 7 years ago to become the sideline reporter for Brooklyn Nets games on Yes. Then he's in year two as a play-by-play TV announcer for the Timberwolves. He's done NBA TV broadcasts, certainly, but nothing compares to a TNT broadcast like he had earlier this week. And he's also done sideline for CBS for football. That's probably the biggest thing he's done, at least in terms of viewership, because it's NFL. But this sees the lead voice, TV voice of that game, which was Kings Mavericks. And so a special opportunity for him, which I'm very happy for him. Being an Indy guy, a Warren Central guy, we both used to work at 1070 The Fan. He was kind of the guidance, the leader, along with Kent Sterling there when I was an intern over a decade ago. As nice as they come, I've done several podcasts with him. So if you want to look at that, check out Fieldhouse Files and search Michael Grady, and you'll be able to listen to at least a couple of those. All right, to wrap up this podcast, I had the chance to talk with Ben Wallace here recently about what he's been up to. And what one of those things is having a mini documentary created about him, From Undrafted to Hall of Famer, the Chosen One mini documentary. It's presented by And One, and four-time All-Star. There were so many good battles back in the day against the Pacers. He was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2021. So it was fun to go and talk with him about this, what he was doing in Indianapolis to help promote it, now working with Rick Carlisle and playing for him, and so many other things. And I thought I appreciated how he talked about, falling in love with the struggle, embracing the struggle, and all the different people he was able to lean on throughout those years. And of course, I had to mention defense, because at the time we were not seeing much defense played throughout the NBA. So to wrap up this podcast, here's my conversation with Pistons great Ben Wallace. All right, now joined by Ben Wallace, the Hall of Famer. You remember him, of course, from his illustrious career with the Detroit Pistons and such, and the great battles with the Pacers. Ben, I wanted to bring you in to talk about this fantastic short documentary that you've recently been a part of. To start out, what was it kind of like to tell your stories yet again, right, to go down memory lane and share some of the highlights of what has made you and so successful in your playing days?
I just thought it was important to get my story out there and let people know, because a lot of people don't know who Ben Wallace is, and to become a Hall of Famer and to have people not really know my story, I thought it was a little bit of injustice to the people to get to understand who I am and how I got to become a Hall of Famer.
To that point, was there some part of your story that, everybody remembers the defense, the hard, tough, hard fouling, the physicality, all of that part of you? What part of you do people not truly understand, do you think, that you tried to present throughout this documentary?
Accountability, holding myself accountable, allowing my teammates, and the coaching staff and, everybody else, fans and everybody to hold me accountable. To be that person to go out and do what I say I'm going to do. I told the guys that this is how I like to play defense. This is how I like to guard guys. This is how I like for you to guard guys. If you need help, I'm going to be here. So, I always try to be there to, help my teammates out. So the biggest thing is accountability, holding my teammates accountable and allowing, everybody to hold me accountable as well.
I think that's something interesting how you bring it up, because I feel like that's something that maybe is missing in today's world a little bit, right? When you can transfer from school to school, or you want to get out of your contract after just signing it last year or whatever. Is that something that clearly you take very much a lot of pride in? Is that something you also see in today's world, where accountability maybe needs to be reinforced throughout the world?
Yeah, like I said, you got to hold yourself accountable. Some decisions don't work out completely in your favor, but if you sign a contract and you say you're going to do this and you say you're going to do that, you should still apply your best effort and try to make it work for the both parties. But But it's also good that guys are able to have that freedom, to move around a little bit and explore different options. But like I say, but that freedom comes with accountability. Without accountability, that freedom get lost on deaf ears.
Yeah, that's a good point as well. One of the things that I was most interested in, I will say, learning even more about what you've been through and what it took to get from, as they said, undrafted to Hall of Famer, which was a great title. Just how much maybe an injury, a football injury, got you into basketball or refocused you. How much do you go back to maybe that decision or that moment in life and how it completely changed your trajectory for your life?
I mean, it's amazing how some things happen in your life, and set you off on a different path. And like I said earlier, in my high school career, as far as sports, football was my focus. Football was the thing that I hung my hat on. And like I said, and once I got that neck injury, it made me shift my focus to basketball. And I was a senior trying to fall in love with another sport, so to speak. And but I've always played basketball, always hoop around the neighborhood and with the guys or whatever. So I was confident I could play basketball as well. So but when if hadn't got hurt playing football, who knows what had happened when it comes to basketball.
So is maybe football your first love, and then basketball is just kind of the way it turned out. Would that be accurate?
I still love and enjoy, football, watching football, following certain teams and stuff like that. But, basketball is what paid the bills, I've got a deep-rooted love for basketball. Always gonna be in love with basketball. Football was the thing that started the sport dream for me.
This is all coming up as part of the 20th anniversary, too, of your Detroit Pistons winning the 2004 NBA Finals. And I think the thing that so many of us think about is how that was maybe the last true team as a collective that was able to get it done. It's not about, do you have, a trio of superstars? Do you have a couple two-time MVPs? That type of thing. When you think back to those 20 years ago and even what led to that championship, what are you most proud of about the way in which that group competed and played together?
You just said it. You hit on it earlier. A complete team. Everybody, had a role, to play. We didn't have to worry about, guys, complaining about who was superstars, who was not a star, who was gonna get the shots, who wasn't gonna get shots or whatever. Everybody was a star in their role. So like we always say, we didn't have any superstars, but we had a, super team.
I'm here in Indianapolis, so of course I cover Rick Carlisle on a daily basis. I'm curious what kind of memories come to mind about your interactions with him. And I'm most interested too, because from what I gather in talking with other players, especially even Chauncey, who was here in the last couple of months as a coach, just how much Rick has had to evolve and transform as a coach from kind of calling out every play you must run this to now entrusting Tyrese Haliburton, the star point guard, to kind of run the show and him sit back and add input as he sees fit.
I think just like everything else, that comes with growth. Rick came in with as a first year coach, with us in Detroit. And we had a team, that he was able to mold together and make it work. And once you get a platform of what you like to do on the court or what you're capable of doing on the court, then you're able to, loosen up and branch out and explore with different things. Like now when Rick is out there coaching, like you said, he completely trusts his guys to go out there and get it done, because he has seen it before. He wasn't one of those coaches that just came out and rolled the ball out. He explored with different things and different options. And now he can, he got out, all the tricks to the trade.
What was it like being here in Indianapolis, I think, for All-Star Weekend and kind of being part and back with some of that NBA family that you were a part of for so very long?
It was great, man, to be back in Minneapolis. Like you said, All-Star Weekend, NBA basketball. Virginia Union played, saw some HBCU
Yeah.
club down there, and for the NBA to use their platform and allow HBCUs to come down there and show some love, man. I thought that was amazing. The game was amazing. The crowd was out there, so we had a great time.
This documentary is all presented by And One, and you mentioned in the documentary how you basically had a shoe at home and a shoe for basketball. I'm curious what you think then when you see so many guys, maybe a PJ Tucker who maybe has three different types of shoes that he changes in game. How much of that has become kind of part of the culture and kind of even the walkway fits, the runway fits as individuals make their way into the arena. That's kind of become a whole new dynamic over the last few years.
Like you said, it's part of the game now. Guys got options to change shoes, as many times as they like. Some guys take advantage of it. For me, with N1, we had a great pair of shoes that was working for me. So I didn't see any need to change. So I just stuck with that routine. But guys got options now. Sometimes it's more about the shoes than it is about the game. It's about the fits coming into the arenas, with social media, guys got a lot of options, to market and advertise themselves.
Yeah, there's pros and cons with anything, right? You got to keep it about the basketball, but at the same time, it presents so many off the court things. Last thing for you, because I know you're busy here. I'm just curious from a defensive standpoint. We know that that's what you're all about, the physicality and defense. In today's game, we're seeing less of it, right? And we do like some of the transformation. We know offense sells tickets and such, but defense, man, you guys won because of your defense. Is there a way to kind of reel it back a little bit and combine the best of both worlds? And trying to make this the most entertaining product, Ben.
I mean, it's a simple fix. Offense sell tickets, defense create competition. Without defense, there's no competition, and defense brings out the best offense. If you're not going to play defense, then everybody on the floor is going to look like, a great offensive player. But if you play defense, then the best offensive player is going to rise to the top and separate themselves from the pack. I think that's the reason that, guys like Michael Jordan, Kobe, LeBron, and those guys, when we was playing hard in those defense, was able to separate themselves from the pack because guys wasn't physically strong enough to keep up that same type of energy and effort night in and night out like they are now because the game is not as physical. But on the other side, if it's working for you, then until somebody make a change, then you enjoy the game the way you loved and enjoyed it and love and like the game.
I like that. Yeah, defense breeds that competitiveness. And then even to the All-Star game, that's why you don't see a competitive game because there is no defense. I appreciate it. Great work on this And One documentary. And thanks for joining me here today, Ben.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Fieldhouse Files podcast. Just a couple weeks remain for the Indiana Pacers. And if you haven't done so already, join me into the community over at fieldhousefiles.com. Free and paid subscriptions. I invite you to join me there. I promise you'll certainly get your money's worth. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Fieldhouse Files podcast, and I'll talk to you again soon.